Welcome to the Deep Practice Podcast, where we will share tips, stories, and strategies that help bring power into your discipleship process.
Hi, friends. Father Dave Nuss here with my co-host, Becky Shabilsky, on the Deep Practice Podcast. Hi, Becky.
Hi, Father Dave. So good to join you again today.
It's great to continue the conversation, a conversation that ended with our both acknowledging that sometimes bad habits can be really stubborn, and we might be inclined to think that I just can't do something differently, even though it's unfulfilling, it's not satisfying, and I wish it were different. I sort of settle in, and I recall the briar patch story that you shared with your own home.
Yeah. It's funny what you just said about bad habits that we tend to settle for. And oftentimes in my life, it's because it's familiar. And venturing into uncharted territory can bring with it some uncertainty and some anxiety. And so even though I'm in the midst of a bad habit, it's what I know. And so I'm willing to stay there, maybe much longer than I should or really want to.
Boy, I find that so true. As you mentioned that, it stirs within me an identification. When it's familiar, it's comfortable. Mm-hmm. And even if it's not a comfort that is enjoyable, I know what it is, I settle in, and it becomes the way of life. It's a simple little story, but I was thinking about golf, and I'm not a particularly good golfer. I won't be accused of playing too much golf. but there was a moment, I think it would have been in high school, when I received some instruction for the very first time. And I had been playing golf for a number of years prior to that. And immediately the instructor identified how I held the club as a problem. Mm. And I can remember almost a defensive response. It's not how I hold the club. It's what's happening when the ball slices.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But holding the club. So bad habit, what we're acknowledging, we're not talking morality, immorality here. We're talking about a pathway that we just have continued to walk that reinforces our behavior, even to the point where we stop imagining that it could be different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I have found in my own work and my own life that it is really easy to disconnect from even the hope that it could be different. And so sometimes in my pastoral work, I would realize that people had become so disconnected from the idea that they could hear from God. You know, and I don't mean an audible voice, but I mean that connection with the Spirit alive and moving and nudging and speaking and prompting to us through Scripture, through other people, that still small voice that we sometimes talk about. People had become so disconnected from the idea that was possible for them.
Yeah. And many times it was a disconnection that initially was brought about by a presentation of the faith that was very narrow in its scope, maybe heavy on doctrine or heavy on learning or heavy on terms, of which there's a place for that, not as life-giving as to meet truth as the one who is truth, who speaks to you and speaks to me.
Yeah. You know, I want to go back to the fact that you were slicing the golf ball.
Wildly.
Because it reminds me of a story that came to mind. Somebody brought it to me. Actually, Bob Beer was the first one who pointed out this story from Coach Jim Steen. He was the swimming and diving coach at Kenyon College.
Yeah.
A small college. But
Ohio College.
Yeah. And he coached for, I think it was like 37 years. And in his coaching career, he did coach both men and women. He led his teams to win 50 NCAA championships.
What?
I know, right? Crazy. More than any other sport. 50. Yeah. I think the stats were that was more than any other coach in any other sport in the NCAA. So something.
Would have to be. He won every season effectively.
And so, of course, when he was interviewed and people said, how did you do this? How did you have this level of success? What he said was that he very intentionally focused on the means and never on the ends. So with his team, he never talked about, we're going to win championships. We're going to, you know, be the greatest, blah, blah, blah. No, he would take each student athlete and work with them to develop their skills, the means that they would need to become the best that they could be. And that was his mentality and his focus. And then we see that when the means become the focus and are focused on properly, the ends just follow. Mm. And that was his whole framework.
You know, that's powerful. That takes me back to a locker room that just all of a sudden comes into my mind in high school. And it was the first time I had ever seen the progression of conference, district, regional, state. And I remember thinking, that's silly. If we mobilize and we're just simply the best we can be, if we really work hard and give ourselves over, I don't know, as a young student, I just thought, student athlete, I thought success will follow, that it's not so much checking boxes at different levels of success. You become a national champion in this story with the coach at Kenyon College by means of really paying attention to the detail with the stroke and the kick and the effort and the training. And then you give it your best and then you give it more of your best and success is going to follow.
Or in the story that you were sharing about, you know, the golf instructor who said, no, we're not going to worry about your swing. Come back to how you're holding the club. We need to start here.
Yes. Before you can do anything else, you have to learn how to hold the club.
But it's in us, isn't it? To say like, oh, I want to get onto that good stuff. I want to do that. But a good coach, a good teacher will point you back to, we need to start where we have to start.
Completely. Yes. Yeah, that's so true. I could just feel my defensiveness with that coach. That no, I've got that down. I know how to do that. I'm not dumb.
Right. and in some ways, whatever way you were holding the club had worked for a while, right? And so you were wanting to progress to the next thing.
Well, debatable whether it really worked well, but
okay.
As I would usually visit two fairways for every one hole.
But bringing that back to the church then, I mean, sometimes, you know, we are tempted to think about, you know, in order to be a faithful servant of God in the church as pastor or leader, we need to be growing. We need to have, a certain number of people. We need to have a certain level of giving. We need to be seeing so many engaging in mission. And we have all of these these ends that we want. And we give ourselves to the ends without maybe adequately coming back to the means applied to the individual.
Entirely. I mean, what sense would it really make to win the conference, win the district, win the region, win the state, if it was totally unenjoyable the entire time? So I can tell people I did something that was unfulfilling and unenjoyable. And I think in more recent years, I too have experienced some pressures, more external pressures and internal pressures, but external pressures that success, Christian success or pastoring success is seen in certain, I guess to use the business term, metrics, mm-hmm. right? So we get all worked up over what attendance is or what finances are, growth and professional staff and, And those dimensions become defining versus more of more inspirational results from simply being committed to smaller fundamental details. If I can just be a good, if I can be a faithful follower of Christ and a joyful follower of Christ today, if I can do that concretely throughout the day, if I can navigate irritation, annoyance, interruptions that are going to be a part of my day and not, I said, navigate them, not eliminate them, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Right? Right? Right. So tell the
annoying one. We wish we had that control. We don't.
We don't. But if we can learn to navigate those and see those as opportunities, and they're part of the metric because it stretched me. It gave me capacity to receive grace where I otherwise wasn't going to receive it, or to maybe see myself where I wasn't willing to look. There's a self-awareness that moves me to be more committed in the living out of my faith. And that's what you and I have discovered through deep practice and accelerated learning in very small ways, to which we apply commitment and regularity and accountability. New paths can be blazed, that mm-hmm. it doesn't have to be the same way it's been.
Yeah. Yeah, this all makes me think back to a time in the church where I was serving, and we were trying out some of these practices in a group setting. It was interesting. I remember praying because I didn't know who to even invite into the group. And I just had this sense that, you know, that the Spirit would lead me to the names to start with. And I was willing and open for it to be a group that I maybe wasn't expecting. And sure enough, in that first group, the invitations that I sent out ended up being to, you know, a handful of people that, you know, in my own way, I probably wouldn't have landed on, but I felt like the Spirit, you know, in prayer pointed me towards these people. And so the ones who agreed to join me, we started a group and we were working on the different practices. And one of the women who agreed to show up and participate had not been attending church very regularly at that point. She had a lot of challenges in her life, and you know, so her attendance, her service, her giving, you know, all of those sorts of metrics, if you will, were almost non-existent. And I say that because of this idea of starting with the means and the ends following. If I would have started and said, you know, you should be out there evangelizing in the workplace, and you should be showing up more, and why aren't you serving? And this is a really great opportunity for your growth if you would just get here more. None of that. But by asking her to come and through the means of deep practice, learn some basic practices of the faith. So I think I'm remembering the story. We were practicing forgiveness together. So working through, how do you actually forgive? And over a period of weeks, you know, on her own at home, she was working on this, you know, 10 minutes here, 10 minutes there. And really, when we got together, it was more so just telling what happened when we tried the practice. So it wasn't me as pastor teaching on what to do. When we got together for our group time, it was, okay, so what happened over this last week in your life when you were using the tool? And you know, over the weeks, as she shared, what began to trickle in were stories about her coworkers coming to her saying, "What is going on with you? You're different." And I mean, without mincing words, she just said, "It's Jesus. Look, I'm using this practice that is really helping me experience forgiveness and freedom like I have never known in my life. And God is clearing away blockages that have been present in my life for my, wow, you know, my entire life."
Wow.
And her attendance started increasing. She willingly volunteered to jump in and serve in some different ways. There was a life and a vitality about her that was so different. And when I reflected on why was this happening, right? Well, of course, God was in the mix, but it was because we focused on the means.
Yeah.
You know, in a very focused, directed way, we were equipping her, you know, to hold the club in the right way, to begin to go to God in a way that she could be positioned for God to do what only God could do in her life. And the fruit followed.
And with your accompaniment, your pastoring in this particular example, she was able to clear out the briar. She was able to, with God's help, she was able to discover new ways that were even recognizable to others around her. Mm-hmm. That's powerful.
Yeah. And that's what we want, isn't it? That's what we want for all of our friends, our family members, our colleagues, our parishioners. That's what we want for everybody.
We do. We do. It doesn't have to be the way it's been just because it's been that way.
And because it's familiar. And so we think, oh, that I have to keep doing this.
Right. Right. That becomes such an obstacle for sure. The familiar. Yeah. Don't let the familiar become the end. Don't let it become the end. Right. Yeah. Huh. I was thinking of the basketball coach, Jimmy Valvano, who won a national championship with North Carolina State in 1983. But Jimmy used to say, before he died of cancer, used to say that every day you want to learn something new and you want to laugh. And that will make for living.
Mm-hmm.
So familiar is comfortable. Comfortable is easier. And yet when it's not fulfilling and it's not bringing joy, radiant joy, and it's not hatching fruit that is good, able to be shared with others, gosh, I feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're here to say it can be different because it's become different in our own lives.
Right. And there is, I think, probably a healthy dose of discomfort when we step into that unfamiliar, when we begin practicing, you know, on the edge of our comfort zone. And I think that Daniel Coyle in The Talent Code, he talks about that really where you can see the most traction and the most transformation is when you routinely get yourself to practice in that zone where there is some discomfort. You're at the edge of, you know, what you know and what's comfortable to you. But by going there, that's where new ground can really be made.
Yeah. And when you see that it is different, I was thinking, you mentioned The Talent Code, and back in The Talent Code, he speaks about ignition, that there are these catalyzing moments or events for people who maybe for the first time can see something that until that moment they weren't able to see. And maybe their comfort or the familiarity, it so limits someone to see possibility or potential with the familiar being comfortable. And the example that Daniel Coyle uses in that particular chapter was with the South Korean golfers. And there was a particular afternoon when a young South Korean woman won an LPGA championship and became this national icon. And young women suddenly went beyond the familiar. Mm-hmm. This isn't possible for us, for whatever reasons they concluded. And there was this igniting moment that actually helped to hatch what is today a talent hotbed.
Yes.
For women's golf. Seeing it done.
Mm-hmm.
And permitting ourselves to be excited by that with a new desire for that to become a part of our lives.
Yeah. And that just points to the power in the learning process of that seeing. You know, and it's so tricky in spiritual things because so often, you know, how I'm going to God is internally, you know, in my inner being, in the quiet of my own heart and my mind. And my kids can't see that. You can't see that. And so how do I begin to show what this is like to go to God in daily life? Just talking about it is not enough. I mean, it's important. It starts the process, but finding ways to show and then do together and practice over and over. And it is a little funny when we're just trying. I always use the word clunky. When we're trying something new, there's this awkwardness, this clunkiness about it. Yeah. But you must go through that on the way to that well-worn pathway where something is now normal and natural, second nature, as we call it.
Yeah. I was instructed by that golf coach to take the club and one hand at a time with great deliberation, place each on the club. Every time I used the club and the putter was separate every time. And for the uninitiated, well, for me, it was really weird, slow grinding, but with time, thinking, oh yeah, catching myself if I had forgotten to do it, and developing a whole new routine. It took time to be comfortable with others being impatient with my routine. But when the success starts to follow, and the success isn't just the game, but a total success of a joy and a sense of satisfaction and fulfillment and accomplishment and the delight that that can bring, you stay the course with that new way.
Yes. And that is the hope that that I have gathered, and I think you have gathered, we have gathered, that deep practice does bring to the table for us in the church, that there is another way that we can go about equipping people to go to God in their daily lives.
Yes.
And it doesn't have to take a lifetime. It can be done in these little moments. And is it hard work? Yes. I mean, it does take a little bit of discomfort and being willing to venture into some discomfort, but it is absolutely doable in life, as busy and full as it is for us. It's possible.
Absolutely. That the commitment will bring forth great results in a short period of time when we give ourselves over to it. So Becky and I are sharing with all of you friends that it is possible that we ourselves are benefiting from that. I mean, it continues real-time benefit. We're grateful for the liberation and the freedom that deep practice applied to Christian truths has brought about in our own individual lives, in our own family lives, in our own ministry leadership. And we are really looking forward to continuing to share with you new pathways that God is eager to blaze in your lives.
Put your entire focus on the means to success, not the ends. These were the words of Coach Jim Steen when he was interviewed about his crazy success in the NCAA. So what does it mean to put our focus on the means in Christian discipleship efforts? That's exactly where we're going to go in our next episode. We hope you'll join us then. In the meantime, you can find us at www.deeppracticepodcast.com. Go ahead and subscribe now so you don't miss the next episode. And thanks again for joining us here on the Deep Practice Podcast. See you soon.